jobs. Jobs, jobs, jobs. 263,000 of them from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today. This one is the 2nd of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We had the jobs report today, of course. We had the Fed chair earlier this week, an update on economic growth as well. And now, a mere 6.5 minutes to make it all make sense. Heather Long is at the Washington Post. Gina Smilek's at the New York Times. Hey, you two.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Heather, let's start with you and the jobs report. 263,000 new jobs added to this economy in November. As I said, the unemployment rate stays steady at 3.7%. Here is my question to you. How is it possible that this job market is still so strong after all the Fed has done?
Well, that certainly was a big surprise this morning, another better-than-expected report. When looking through the details, was surprising to see, despite the real estate woes we have, construction added 20,000 jobs, despite all those headlines of tech companies giving a lot of pink slips, IT added 19,000 jobs. And my personal favorite to watch these days is even laundry services. So people, you know, going and getting dry cleaning done added 11,000 jobs. Wow. So, you know, you certainly don't think we're in a recession when people are still eager to get all of their clothes dry cleaned for the offices they aren't going to. But so overall, I think the message still remains that it's a stronger than expected labor market because we don't have enough workers to fill all these open roles. But I do think there were starting to be a couple of signs of potential woe. Temporary hires have fallen for the last few months. And you often forget that the jobs report is really two surveys that are merged into one. And while that 263,000 headline number sticks in our memories, the other survey, the household survey, has been showing that we actually lost jobs the past few months and really haven't added any for the last 8 months. So there's starting to be very different stories coming out of the two reports, and we'll see which one is right this winter.
And also, Gina, this thing called labor force participation rate, you've been doing some reporting on this. We're losing people from this labor force.
Yeah, labor force participation has been one of the big surprises of this cycle. We saw it really sort of tick down sharply, obviously, in 2020 when people lost jobs during the pandemic. Then it was really rebounding, but that rebound has really sort of petered out recently. It's actually declined a bit. And for some demographics, it's still way below where we were back in 2020. And so I think it's a real mystery why that's happening. It's clearly bad news. It suggests that, you know, we're not getting the labor supply that could help to sort of right some of the imbalance that Heather was talking about. You know, this is a strong labor market, partially because demand for labor is really high, but it's also a hot labor market, partially because we just don't have enough workers. Mm-hmm. We have way fewer workers than we had before the pandemic.
And yet, Heather, we are still, as a, you know, consuming body in this country, we're still spending a whole lot of money on the individual level.
Yes, that's exactly correct. Although I think it's important to realize, and Gina wrote a great piece about this over Thanksgiving, and I had written a column about it way back in the spring, that this is really a tale of two consumers. The upper middle class consumer is still going out and buying a lot, going on nice vacations, spending big at restaurants. But certainly lower middle class consumers are shifting their spending to not buying the name brands, they're buying the generic brands, and they're shifting from even Target to Walmart to save as much money as they can. So while consumer spending overall drives this economy, I think we need to remember, I hate the term soft landing. You know, even if we manage to avoid a recession next year, it sort of conveys this idea that there will be no pain, when it's clear there already is some pain and there probably will be a good bit more.
Well, not to pile on here, Gina, on Heather's, you know, most hated phrase, I guess, of soft landing, but Jay Powell did give a speech this week. He took some questions from David Wessel at Brookings, and he said he still thinks there's a way to do this that would be a soft or soft-ish, I think is what Powell said, landing. How does he thread this needle?
So I think that the very hopeful case that you will hear Chair Powell and his colleagues lay out, and they've been doing this consistently, is that if the job market slows down but doesn't sort of completely tank. Mm-hmm. So if we see job openings, for example, just kind of come down on their own, you know, things start to cool off a little bit, but we don't actually see firings, then we could get in a situation where wage growth decelerates, we get a slowdown in the rest of the economy that we think is coming. You know, we're pretty sure that goods inflation is going to really mm-hmm. sort of start to subtract mm-hmm. from inflation going forward here. And we basically know that rent inflation at some point is going to start, you know, turning over and slowing down, because we've seen that happen already in market-based rent. So you get those two trends, you combine it with a slowing labor market, it could be the case that we get a nice gentle slowdown. Now, the problem is that the labor market isn't actually slowing. Right. And so that becomes a much harder story to tell, you know, and Chair Powell acknowledged that during his speech. So it's possible. It clearly is not guaranteed at this stage.
Yeah. One of the other things, Heather, that Chair Powell said was, in essence, yeah, we should have started, you know, keeping an eye on this sooner. And we were late to the fact that inflation was so big. Do you think the Fed's credibility is on the line here?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. It's definitely refreshing to hear a public servant say that they were wrong. But I think you're right. This actually isn't the first time that we heard the Fed chair admit that he had made a mistake. He did the same thing in 2019 when they had started to raise interest rates, mm-hmm. and then they regretted doing that and realized unemployment could go a lot lower. And so I think you're right. I worry a little bit that it's good that they're doing a lot of self-reflection, but they've had a couple of pretty big misses here. And the problem really across the board with economic policy is they're always fighting the last battle.
Right.
And so you worry here that, okay, what's sticking in his mind is that they should have acted faster to address inflation. And you worry, does that mean they're just going to keep hiking, mm-hmm. hiking and overdoing it because they're worried that they were late? And they don't, you know, they don't want to be late or not do enough here.
Yeah. Gina, super quick, just at the end here, has to be pointed out that we got the update on third quarter gross domestic product. This economy's growing or grew in the third quarter at 2.9%, which is basically on trend, a little bit above, which, I mean, people are talking recession and you look at that number and you're like, how?
Yeah, I'm going to get hate mail for saying this, but a lot of the data look like the economy is reaccelerating.
Right.
You know, GDP, spending data, wages look like the shruggy emoji my husband pointed out to me earlier today. You know, it's a lot of different data points sort of suggest that. So I think that's a thing worth watching as we head into next year. You know, that's not what the Fed's looking for.
Do not send Gina Smilek hate mail. Just don't. Just don't do that. Gina Smilek at the New York Times and Heather Long at the Washington Post. Thanks, you two.
Thank you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, it was kind of a calm end to the week. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, a couple of more stories now, digging in a bit to today's jobs report. One of the more surprising data points was that wages went up again. They're now up 5.1% over the past year. Marketplace's Samantha Fields explains what that might tell us about the economy now and what it might mean for the economy yet to come.
A lot of us in the workforce hear wages are going up and think that's a good thing, especially right now when everything's gotten so much more expensive. William Rogers at the St. Louis Federal Reserve agrees.
These pay raises are badly needed for a major part of our country, particularly those at the lower part of the income scale.
And he says we're not in a place where rising wages are driving inflation.
This report does not, I repeat, does not suggest a wage spiral like the 1970s. In fact, there's been no acceleration in wage growth.
Instead, he says it's been pretty steady. And inflation is starting to decelerate, at least a little. Daniel Zhao at Glassdoor says there are signs the job market is starting to slow, too.
It might not be happening as quickly as we had expected, but things are cooling off.
It's still strong, though. Unemployment is low, and the labor market is tight. Julia Pollack at ZipRecruiter says that's why wages are still going up.
Employers continue to experience acute shortages of qualified candidates, and people are leaving the labor market, not coming back.
So many employers are still offering big salaries and sign-on bonuses to attract and keep workers. And pretty much everyone knows it.
The past year and a half of very rapid wage growth has kind of set expectations among job seekers.
And she says she expects that to continue for a while. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
All right, here is data point number two from today's jobs report. Nearly 970,000 people in this economy work in daycare, a number that has been moving steadily up for more than a year now, but which is still more than 8% lower than it was in the before times. And if more parents are going to be able to go back to work, childcare is going to be a key factor. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has that one.
Because there are fewer daycare providers, there are at least 500,000 fewer daycare spots, estimates Wells Fargo senior economist Sarah House, which means parents are scrambling.
It's limiting either their overall work schedules or whether they can join the workforce in the first place.
The childcare spots that are left cost more. They've gone up 4.9% in the last year. In order to bring childcare workers back, Elise Gould at the Economic Policy Institute says it's economics, not rocket science.
Pay is one thing, providing benefits, having better working conditions, having better hours, all of those things are going to entice more workers into that profession.
And as the number of jobs in retail and the goods economy overall declines, those workers may look for jobs in childcare. Again, economist Sarah House.
Perhaps we'll see some of that gap narrow between the relative pay of daycare workers, for example, versus going and working at a warehouse.
But some areas of the country are also professionalizing daycare, setting it up as a crucial beginning to education. Meredith Johnson Harbach studies family law at the University of Richmond.
Education also provides childcare to the extent children are being supervised, and childcare is also education.
Harbach says there's a tendency to talk about childcare as a way to let parents work, when it's also about letting children start the lifelong work of learning. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
It's been 6 weeks now that Russia's been targeting Ukraine's electrical infrastructure, obviously targeting the Ukrainian economy along with it and testing civilian endurance, too. But it's entirely possible, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports, that the Russians are going to get an economic result they didn't really bargain for.
The Russian attacks on Ukraine's power network have been relentless, and says Joseph Mikit at the U.S. Center for Strategic and International Studies, potentially catastrophic.
Every element of Ukrainian society that requires electricity is going to be pressured, from hospitals to homes, and it will have grave humanitarian impacts if it's to continue.
So far, according to DTEC, Ukraine's largest private sector power company, the attacks have knocked out some 40% of the country's electricity supply. There are daily blackouts in different parts of Ukraine lasting between 4 and 8 hours. Tonya Antosha, DTEC's chief spokesperson in the capital, Kyiv, said the Russian leader is lashing out in impotent fury.
Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, is being defeated on the battlefield, so he's terrorizing the civilian population.
But, says Andrian Prokip, an energy expert with the Ukrainian Institute for the Future, a think tank in Kyiv, there could be method in this evil madness.
The key aim is to conduct psychological pressure on people so that people pressure the government, pushing the government for negotiation.
To seek a peace deal that leaves the Russians in control of the territory they invaded. If that is the aim, it has so far failed, claims Tonya Antosha. The Ukrainian people are buckling down and adapting to an erratic power supply.
Well, they're buying generators, they're buying candles, they're buying warm clothes, and they are ready to survive this winter, no matter what it takes.
But in attacking the country's power network, Putin may have had an additional secondary target, the European Union. Ukraine, says Andrian Prokrip, plugged into the EU's grid just after the invasion and had, until the infrastructure attacks, been pumping electrons into the bloc.
The European Union states had this relatively cheap electricity from Ukraine rather than producing it from some gas at extraordinary high prices.
Three EU member states, Poland, Romania and Slovakia, had been receiving Ukrainian electricity. There was talk about Germany having some too. There was plenty to help the continent wean itself off Russian gas, says Tonya Antosha. With its economy in a post-invasion slump, Ukraine had an even bigger surplus than usual.
Ukraine is basically the only country that can help Europe get rid of its overdependence on Russian energy resources.
Not at the moment it can't, thanks to Putin's attack on Ukraine's power network. The loss of Ukrainian electricity could intensify Europe's energy crunch and increase support within the EU for appeasing Putin. But Joseph Mikit of the CSIS says the opposite is happening.
Transformers are being shipped to Ukraine from European countries. Development banks are thinking through how they can help finance the reconstruction of the Ukrainian power sector.
Around three-quarters of Ukraine's usually abundant electricity is carbon-free, coming from nuclear and renewable sources. It's long been Ukraine's ambition to become a giant green energy hub for the EU. Ironically, says Mikit, achieving that dream has been given fresh impetus by the invasion.
The dynamic that Putin has really walked himself into is the acceleration of the economic and technical integration of Europe and Ukraine.
After the war, and partly due to those attacks on its power supply, Ukraine may wind up more firmly plugged into the West than ever. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up,
employees gained access to a far wider range of employment options than they had before.
And those options are getting exercised. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials gained 34 points today. That's a 10th percent. Closed at 34,429, did the blue chips. The Nasdaq shed 20 points, about 2/10 percent, 11,461 on that particular index. The S&P 500 off 4 points, about a 10th percent, 4,071. For the week, 5 days gone by, the Dow up 0.25%, the Nasdaq improved 2 1/10 percent, the S&P 500 up about 1 1/10 percent. Intel off almost 1 4/10 percent. The Financial Times reports chipmaker had offered its staff in Ireland 3 months of unpaid leave as a cost-cutting measure. Food delivery service DoorDash cooled 3 1/3 percent today after a downgrade from RBC Capital Markets. The research firm cited slower growth in orders and more competition from rival Uber. Uber, thank you for asking, grew 1 4/10 percent on the day today. Bond prices were up as well. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 3.49 percent. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hundreds of tribal leaders gathered in Washington this week for the White House Tribal Nations Summit. Among the announcements, which included new federal money for tribal climate resilience and Energy Department promises to do more business with tribal nations, were commitments from the Biden administration to do something that Native leaders have been pushing on for a long, long time, tribal co-management of public lands. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more on that.
The Kudukk tribe's traditional territory spans a little over 1 million acres in what is now northwestern California. But today,
98% of that is national forest system.
Bill Tripp with the tribe's Natural Resources Department says this year it partnered with the U.S. Forest Service to reintroduce prescribed burning.
You know, what better place to look than to indigenous communities and to overcome the historic injustice that surrounds this discussion?
The Kuduk tribe didn't just hand over its territory in the 19th century. Neither did any other tribe whose ancestral land is now federally managed, says Andrew Curley with the University of Arizona.
A lot of it historically has been through violent removal of Indian nations from their traditional home bases.
Curley says this push for tribal co-management isn't new. The Fed's willingness to engage definitely is. The five tribes with ancestral ties to Bears Ears National Monument in Utah recently got a voice in conservation and development decisions. Sharisa Mizazipi Wilson is with the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition.
But the agencies aren't required to actually adopt that input in any way or shape or form. They just have to consider it.
Bill Tripp knows all about that. His department and the Forest Service have butted heads over burning regulations.
The Forest Service doesn't recognize our sovereign right to burn.
But his tribe has a seat at the table now. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
So that November jobs report we've been talking about all day, it's important that you know that that's a net number. It's all the hiring that happened in this economy last month, minus all the layoffs and retirements and people quitting. Point being, there's always a certain amount of churn in the labor market, right? But along came the pandemic and the labor market pot wasn't just stirred, it was shaken vigorously too. People decided to switch careers or just go looking for a job that paid better. Since then, what's happened, do you suppose? Marketplace's Justin Ho has this churn update.
Let's start with layoffs. We've been hearing a lot about job cuts at big tech companies recently, but the overall number of layoffs is still well below pre-pandemic levels by several hundred thousand every month. Peter Urazum is an economics professor at Iowa State University.
There's not a whole lot of firms that want to be laying people off because it's so hard for them to hire.
But layoffs are not the biggest factor in labor market churn. People quitting their jobs is. Right now, quits are well above pre-pandemic levels by hundreds of thousands a month.
And they've been at an atypically high level for most of the pandemic.
And that's the sign that there's a lot more churn happening in the labor market than there was before the pandemic. Caitlin Duffy is a research director at the consulting firm Gartner. She says companies used to have to assume about 1 in 5 of their employees would quit every year. Now that's jumped to 1 in 4.
So in other words, a workforce of 25,000 employees would need to prepare for an additional 1,000 voluntary departures.
Duffy says this is the Great Resignation. People have been seeking out jobs that give them more flexibility. And as more people started working remotely,
employees gained access to a far wider range of employment options than they had before and more freedom to pursue roles more attractive than their current ones.
And that's good news. Higher churn rates are a sign of a healthy labor market, says John Haltewanger, an economics professor at the University of Maryland.
That's oftentimes the way workers move up the job ladder. There are earnings gains associated.
Haltewanger says job churn can help employers, too. That's because a worker who moves from job to job is likely to land somewhere where their skills are a better fit, and that improves productivity.
A high productivity business is in part a high productivity business because it attracts and retains good workers and workers that are well matched to what that firm is trying to do.
Haltewanger says it's still too early to tell whether the broader economy is benefiting from higher churn rates, since a lot of the upsides of job churn play out over the long term. Meanwhile, over the last 6 to 8 months, data suggests the churn rate may have peaked, says Skanda Amarnath, executive director of the advocacy group Employ America.
We've seen that the volume of quits and hires has been going down from elevated levels, albeit.
That's a sign that churn could be settling closer to its pre-pandemic level.
But not that we are seeing a new regime of quitting and hiring relative to what we otherwise would see.
Before the pandemic, there were a lot of factors causing job churn to decline over the last couple decades, says Kate Bond, chief economist at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth.
Things like corporate concentration, of course, if companies are bigger, you're less likely to move between companies. There's the long-term decline in worker bargaining power that I think also could be reducing job churn.
And even though labor market forces are on the worker side right now, Bond says there haven't been any changes to labor market policy that would keep job churn elevated in the long run. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today won't come as news, I should say, to anybody who's been struggling to make rent. Zillow is out with some new research that shows people are now having to work 63 hours a month to make their rent. 3 years ago, it was 57 hours a month. And now, of course, you're saying, but wait, Sam Field said earlier that wages are going up. And they are. Zillow, though, does point out that while wages are up 23% the past 5 years, rent is up almost 37% in those same 5 years. All right, we're out of here. But first, of course, your moment of economic context. It's on the theory that if we stop talking about this stuff, we're going to stop talking about this stuff. Unemployment overall, as we said, 3.7% last month. That was steady. White unemployment, 3.2%. Black unemployment in this economy in 2022, 5.7%. That is actually down just a little bit. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.